Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Samach Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the upper part of Daf Samach Tes, you will notice 6 lines from the top, there is a slash mark and then a double underlined Omer of Yitzchok. That will be our point of beginning for today's shiur. Before we read the Gemara, however, let us take a look at the outside margin. We have a nosei. Nosei is one of the features of our marking system where we offer topic headings and structural notes. Structural notes will be headed by the term mivne, the structure, whereby we'll feature brief explanations of what the symbols are trying to accomplish sugya by sugya, section by section. In this case, the topic heading has under it written, Malikas Zor, Kamitzas Zor, Echod Tered, V'Echod Lo Tered. Malika is the method of slaughter for sacrificial bird offerings, and Kamitzas is the handful of matter taken in the case of a grain offering. The Malika done by Azar is a non-Kohen, or the Kamitzah done by Azar, one of these, even though both of them are incorrect, meaning they are not the way things should be done, a Kohen is expected to do the Malika in the case of the bird offering, and a Kohen is expected to take the handful of grain or baked goods in the case of a meal offering. However, even though both were incorrect, if they are brought onto the Mizbeach, in one case it is to be brought down. In other words, it's so incorrect that it can't stay on top of the Mizbeach. In the other case, it's not so incorrect. We'll have to explain ourselves, of course, as we see in the Gemara. But one of them is not so bad, so to speak, and as a result of that, it can stay on the Mizbeach. That's Loteirid. Turning now to the Gemara. We, of course, have a marking here under Reb Yitzchok, which is to be contrasted with another double underline. The double underlinings are one of our series markings, whereby we want to emphasize ideas or names that are related to one another. So here we have Rav Yitzchok, and then just a few lines later you'll see a double underline under Chizkiya. Amar Rav Yitzchok, Shomati Shtayim. I heard 2 points of law. Achas Kemitzas Azor, V'Achas Malikas Azor. One referring to the handful taken by a non-Kohen, and the other, the case of the slaughtering of a sacrificial bird offering by a non-Kohen. Achas Tered, V'Achas Lo Tered. One is expected to be taken off the Mizbeach in the event that it was brought on, was taken up to the top. Incorrectly. The achas lo terid, and the other one, even though it was done incorrectly, if it's brought up, it nevertheless remains there. V'lo yodana ezehi, and I don't know which is which. So Rav Yitzchok presents the 2 laws, but doesn't clarify them. Omar Chizkiya is associated with Rav Yitzchok, as you can see with our markings. He takes a stand. Mistabro kemitza tered, maliko lo tered. It's most likely, or it's logical to suggest that the kemitza is the one to be taken off the mizbech, whereas the maliko can remain on. My shno, the Gemara asks, what's the difference? My shno maliko de yeshno beboma, kemitza nami yeshno beboma. if you're seeking a precedent for trying to understand why the Malika may stay on the Mizbeach, is because there's precedent for a non-Kohen doing Malika, and that's in the case of the Boma. The Boma is something that we discussed in our previous shiur, so we'll just briefly review it. This is during the era of personal altars, when personal altars were allowed. After the Beis HaMikdash, the final temple was a final temple location was chosen in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem. From that point in history onwards, there was no longer an allowance made for personal altars. However, prior to that, there were periods in time that before the Mishkan in Shiloh and between the time of the Mishkan in Shiloh and the building of the Beis HaMikdash were periods in time where personal altars were allowed. During that time, when sacrifices were offered, there was no requirement of having a Kohen doing the sacrificial service. So we see a precedent, a historical precedent for a non-Kohen being involved with sacrificial service. So if that's the basis of allowing the case of Malika, because there was Malika done by non-Kohanim, and therefore if in the time of Isser Bomos, where the Bomos were prohibited, nevertheless, if the Malika's Zar was brought onto the top of the altar in the Beis HaMikdash, it would stay there. If that's what you're arguing, if you're basing your allowance, so to speak, on the Boma, then Kemitza Nami Yeshna Beboma. Well, by the same token, handfuls of meal offerings during the time of the Boma period, that they were also done by non-Kohanim. So this, yet we're looking for a point of distinction between the two. The Gemara has a bracketed section. We'll skip the bracketed section for the purpose of easing on the reading. So, finish the immediate piece of Gemara, then we'll go back over the bracketed section. So at this point, though, we don't see a svara or a basis of saying that Malika's Zar is that which is low Teirid. So why did Chizkiah say that? Skipping the brackets, Elo, Emo, and you can see the length of the brackets by our bracket length indicator, the dashed, dotted vertical line to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. If anyone has a problem seeing the line on which the brackets end, so you just skim down that vertical dash dotted line, and you see the Gemara picks up, Elo, Emo, rather say that the reason the Kemitzas Zar is to be taken off the Mizbeach, and in fact not to learn from Boma, is because of the following. Elo'emo ein kiddush kli shores b'mincha b'Boma. Part of the meal offering process is after the handful was taken, the handful of grain offering was then put into another service vessel, a kli shores. And it received a certain, we'll call it, additional level of sanctity. And then it was brought to the Mizbeach to be offered, brought to the altar to be put on the fire. That process did not take place at the Boma. So since this aspect of the Mincha process was not present at the Boma, we can't use the Boma as a precedent for what we want to accomplish at the Mizbeach. And what we're trying to determine by the Mizbeach is something brought up on the altar, even though it was done incorrectly, and shall stay there. We can't say that with the case of the Mincha, because at the Boma there was no kli shores there. Let's now go over the bracketed section. The point made just before the brackets was, what is different about the Malika that we say it's low tered from the Kemitza? And if you try to say the difference would be that Malika was found by the Boma and Kemitza not, but Kemitza was also found by the Boma. V'chitema, you might want to say, we read the Gemara now in the brackets, that ein mincha b'boma, that there were no meal offerings done at the boma. Hence, you wouldn't be able to use boma as a precedent. Well, if you were to say that, then ein ofos nami b'boma, then there would be no, by the same token, there would be no bird offerings by the boma. The Oman Rav Sheshes, L'divrei Omer Yesh Mincha B'Boma Yesh Ofas B'Boma. According to the opinion that says that at private altars they offered meal offerings, then at private altars they also offered bird offerings. However, L'divrei Omer Ein Mincha, according to the opinion that says that there were no meal offerings at private altars, Ein Ofos, there would have been no birds either. My Taima. What is the basis of this? The answer is Zvochim. Now, this word Zvochim is quoted from a posuk in the context of Bomas. If you notice the Rashi, four lines from the top, there's a little starred Rashi that we have. It says, Vayizbechu Zvochim Shlomim. And this posuk was found at Mount Sinai when they were offering sacrifices. And that was a case of a Boma. So in the pasuk it says they offered zvachim. So the word zvachim indicates animals that are slaughtered by a knife. And that word is an exclusionary expression. So the man d'omar that says there was no mincha, there were also no ofos, my taimo. Zvachim, the word zvachim is found in that pasuk, v'lo menachos. Menachos are meal offerings, not animals slaughtered by knives. Zvachim v'lo ofos, likewise, the word zvachim excludes ofos because ofos were not slaughtered by a knife either. Elo emo, so rather, we must say the reason that kmitzas zar is to be brought, taken off the mizbeach, if it's brought on, is because there is no precedent for it from a boma whatsoever for the following reason. Ein kiddush kli shoreis b'mincha b'boma. Because there was no kiddush kli shoreis is a reference of the taking of the handful of meal offering after the kmitza was done and placed into an additional or a new kli shoreis and then brought to the mizbeach. Since that didn't happen at all in the boma, I can't use the boma or kmitza sazar as a precedent for the mizbeach. Molak b'smoil u b'layla v'chuvay. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a Tanaic source with a bowtie word highlighted. And as you skim down in the Gemara, you'll notice there's another source that follows immediately, likewise, with a word highlighted in a bowtie. And we have a topic heading for our outside margin. The title under the no say heading, you see Hayecholes, the power shel malika or shchita, l'tayer mitumas beis habliya. We're talking about the slaughtering of birds, either through the malika process or the shchita process. Shchita is slaughtering with a knife from under the neck. Malika is the severing of the neck through the use of one's thumbnail. In general, kosher variety birds, if they are found dead, in other words, they didn't receive a proper slaughtering, they communicate tumas nevela upon one's eating their flesh. That's called tumas beis habliya. Shchita and malika, when everything is done properly, when all circumstances are go, then there is no tumas beis habliya. So that shchita and malika potentially have the power of preventing tumas beis habliya of setting in. We will have a little bow tie marking, and that's havlotas malika and shchita. Let's now see the Gemara. Ton Rabbanan, Yochotei Malika Shi Lifnim Mitama Begona Beveis Habliya. This is a reference to a proper Malika. Lifnim means in the Azora. Could it be that Malika that's done properly would result in the bird communicating Tumas Beis HaBliya. Talmud Lomar, and if we skip momentarily, Trefa. The Gemara cites a Pasuk from Vayikra, Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tes Vav. Let's glance at the side of our Gemara where we have this written in. Vayikra Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tes Vav says, V'chol nefesh eshet toichal, nevela u'trefa, bo'ezroch, u'beged, bo'ezroch u'beger, v'chibes begodov, v'rochatz b'mayim, v'tomei ad ha'orev, v'toher. So the Pasuk makes reference to one eating, and the term nevela u'trefa is used. One eats of that, so they receive, they become tomei. So the Pasuk uses the word trefa, which is designed to exclude the case of malika. And it does so by saying ma trefa she'ein materes eso iser. When an animal, or we'll talk about a bird, at the point that a bird becomes a trefa, so it doesn't remove any iser, any prohibition that was there before. It just becomes a trefa, and it doesn't affect. It doesn't, as we say, it doesn't remove any prior prohibition. So something like that will communicate Tumas Beis HaBliya. Af kol she'ein materes eso iser. So to any other phenomenon that doesn't remove the iser. Yotza malika shehi lifnim, to the exclusion of the case of malika that's done in the azara, hoyel v'hi materes eso iser, it removes the prohibition. The prohibition is as follows: when it was alive, it was prohibited from being offered on the mizbeach. Now that you do malika to it, that removes that prohibition. So we say that yotza malika shehi lifnim, to the exclusion of malika, shehoyel v'hi materes eso iser, ein mitama begolem bebeis HaBliya. We might want to point out that malika itself creates a nevela in a manner of speaking. In other words, a bird who's, let us talk for a moment about birds that are not in the Beis HaMikdash, not part of sacrificial ceremonies. One just takes a chicken and cuts its neck from behind, punctures its neck from behind, whereby he's cracking its spine and spinal cord, and then severs one of the neck pipes, the trachea or esophagus. That, as far as halachas of kashrus are concerned, is a murdered animal. It's not a slaughtered or ritually slaughtered animal. You have just created a nevela. Technically speaking, that's a standard nevela. And as such, it would communicate tumas nevela. In the case of kosher variety birds, the nevela is tuma is absorbed while one is eating it. However, malika, namely the use of the fingernail in severing the neck when dealing with a sacrificial bird, that's the right thing to do. It's true you're creating a nevela, but that's what the Torah expects you to do. And upon doing that, you now make the bird mutter, to be brought on the Mizbeach, whereby originally it was prohibited, a live bird you don't bring on the Mizbeach. Now you can. So since it's matir, the previous Iser, so there's no Tumas Begon Beis HaBliya. Well, everything we've described so far with this issue of removing previous Iser, we continue reading, Ovi Molak Kochim Bachutz. V'chulin bein bifnim bein bechutz. I will include in this the malika done to kochim outside the Beis HaMikdash, or malika done to chulin whether it's inside or outside. Hoyul v'ein matirin eso iser metamen begodem abeis abliyah. So in accordance with our rule, when does Malika accomplish removal of Tumas Beis Abliyah? That's when you're dealing with Malikas Kochim Bifnim. Because it's only at that point that you have this phenomenon of Materes Eso Iser, of removing, the removing of a previous Iser. Whereas a sanctified bird, while alive, could not be brought on the Mizbeach. While when you do the Malika, now you can bring it on the Mizbeach. This is not the case if you are to have done Malika to a sanctified bird, but outside the Beis HaMikdash. That's not allowed to be brought on the Mizbeach. And likewise, if you're dealing with a non-sanctified bird, whether it be inside or outside, since you're not matir, you're not allowing any previous iser, it was usher before, and it remains usher after. Therefore, there is Tumas Begodem Abeis HaBliyah. And that's all based on the pasuk that cites the, uses the word trefa, namely the appearance of a trefus in a bird doesn't remove any previous iser. So too with regard to the way we approach Malika. There was a line that was bracketed off that we'll go back and read now. And it said in the Brisa, could it be that Malika, Malika's Pnim, the Malika done in the Azora, would result in the bird being Metamed Begonim Bebeis Abliyah? So, Talmud Lomar, Nevela. There was an attempt by the Gemara to cite the word Nevela from the Posuk in Vayikra Yudzayin Posuk Tezvov. The Gemara, however, says you can't cite Nevela in order to describe or in order to, contrast or use Nevela as a precedent for Malika, because Ha'nami Nevela hi. Malika is in fact a creation of a Nevela. You're making a Nevela. Ela Talmud Lomar Trefa. Rather, to learn about Malika, let's look at Trefa. Let's look at the phenomenon of a Trefa. And as we said, when a Trefa, which is an internal organ damage, which of which there are a specific number of examples that are featured in the Maseches Chulin, the third parak of Maseches Chulin, what are trefos? So just like that phenomena known as trefa does not remove any previous iser, and then we say, if you have something like that happening to the bird, where there's no removal of previous iser, then you have the chance of encountering Tumas Beis HaBliyah. Turning to the next source, Tanya Idach, Yochol Tehe Shchitas Chulin Lifnim V'Kodshim Bein Mi Bifnim U'Bein Mi Bachutz Metama Abeis HaBliyah. Could it be that shechita of a bird that's using a knife and cutting its neck from underneath the neck, which is standard shechita procedure, could it be that if one shechts a non-sanctified bird in the Azara, or he slaughters with a knife a sanctified bird, whether it be in the Azara or outside the Azara, that there would be Tumas Beis HaBliyah? So once again, you see the same structure as we had before. So since we're aware of it, that we the word Nevela is not going to be the precedent word or the teaching word. Rather, the trefa word will be, which is found right after the brackets. We'll read it straight through. Talmud Lomar, Nevela. Let us try to learn from Nevela. The Gemara asks, "But ha nami Nevela hi?" Who is to say that this incorrect shechita, in other words, the shechita of an unsanctified bird, of a chulin bird in the Azora, or the slaughtering of a kochim bird, which is just the wrong thing to do, because with kochim birds you don't use the knife slaughtering process which is called Shechita. And if one does that, have you not in fact created a Nevela? How can I use Nevela to learn about this topic when this topic is in effect a Nevela? Therefore, Talmud Lomar Trefa, let us learn about this incorrect Shechita from the phenomenon of Trefa. Ma Trefa Shove Bifnim Kibachutz. Just like Trefa is equal whether you're in the Beis HaMikdash or out of the Beis HaMikdash, Afkol, and that will create a situation of Tumas Beis Habliya. Af kol sheshavos bifnim kibachutz. So too, other things that are equal inside and outside, namely inside the Beis HaMikdash and outside the Beis HaMikdash, they are prohibited. Yotza, to the exclusion of Shechitas Chulin bifnim, or the Kachim, Beimi bifnim, Beimi bachutz, or the slaughter of Kachim, of sanctified birds, whether in the Beis HaMikdash or outside. Since there is a difference between Bifnim and Bechutz, so therefore there is no Tumas Begona Beis Abliya. To say things in a shorter version, when there is equality, then there will be Tumas Begona Beis Abliya. When there's lacking of equality or differentiation, then there will be no Tumas Begona Beis Abliya. What do we mean by this similarity and difference? So, Bishlama Chulin, I understand the case of Chulin, which we labeled here Aleph, to correspond with the Aleph in the source itself. I understand there that Shechitas Chulin Bifnim will remove the Tumas Beis Abliya, even though it's not the right thing to do. You're not supposed to bring unsanctified or unconsecrated animals into the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say, well, if he did, I nevertheless understand why there's no Tumas Beis Abliya, because lo bishma chulin lo shavu bifnim kibachutz. There's a difference between inside and outside. Namely, inside the Beis HaMikdash, one is not to do shechita to chulin. Outside the Beis HaMikdash is the place of doing shechita to chulin. Ela kachim, but with regard to shechitas kachim, slaughtering of kachim, of consecrated bird offerings, edi ve'edi, psulim ninu, whether you're inside or outside, it's an incorrect thing to do. They're both possible. There's no din of shechita with regard to bird offerings. The din of shechita doesn't apply. Rather, there's a din of malika that applies to kachim birds. Omar Rava. So Rava explains how it is that the Shechita has the power or has significance enough to remove the Tumas Beis Abliya. Omar Rava. Im ho'ila loy Shechitas chutz l'chayvoy kores loy toyul l'taro midei nevela. This may be a little ironic, but nevertheless, there is an element of significance, and we're attaching ourselves to that particular point. Ravas points out that if one were to take a consecrated bird offering and slaughter it with a knife outside the Beis HaMikdash, he will be guilty of the avera known as Shechitas Chutz. So that there is a... Let us contrast that. For example, if one were to take a consecrated bird and simply smother it outside the Beis HaMikdash, it's not a nice thing to do. It's wrong to do it, but he's not chayav kores, which is very severe punishment. He would not be chayav kores for simply smothering the bird. However, if he shechts the kachim bird outside the Beis HaMikdash, he is chayav kores. So that we see that there is a shame shechita. There's a labeling of shechita that's associated with the shechita of a kachim bird outside the Beis HaMikdash. And by the way, shechita is what's what's done with regard to an animal, and with regard to a consecrated animal, if one shechts it outside the Beis HaMikdash, that's clearly Shechitas Chutz. But even in the case of birds, where Malika is the design process, nevertheless, if one does Shechita to a Kochim bird outside the Beis HaMikdash, he is Chayav Kores. So since the Shechita has the power of being Mechayav Him Kores, it has sufficient significance, enough to remove the Tumas Beis HaBliya as well. Well, the Gemara goes on, Ashkichon Chutz, that is a good explanation for the removal of the Tumas Beis HaBliya with regard to Shechitas Chutz of a Kochim bird, Penim Min Olon. What about the Shechitas Pnim of a Kochim bird? From where do we know that that accomplishes Tahara, removal of Tumas Beis HaBliya? Answer, Hoyul Veloy Shavu Bifnim Kibachutz. Well, this goes back to our previous rule, the rule that was found in the source, since the inside is different than from the outside. Namely, inside the Beis HaMikdash, there's no Chiyuv Kores. When done outside the Azara, the Shechitas Oif Kochim does create Kores. Ihochi Molak Kochim Bachutz Nami. With regard to Malikas Kochim Bachutz, we were taught above that it creates Tuma. But why should that be? Why should Malikas Kochim Bachutz create Tuma? We should say the same thing. The lo shavu. Let's read that again. Iochi mola kochim b'chutz nami lo. Should lo meanings it should not communicate tuma. The lo shavu b'fnim kibachutzin. There's a difference between b'fnim kibachutz. B'fnim, that's the right thing to do. Malikas kochim b'chutz, it's the wrong thing to do. So why was it taught above that Malikas Kochim Bachutz does communicate Tumas or create Tumas Beis HaBliya? Omar of Simi Bar Ashi, Donin Dover Shelo Behechshero Mi Dover Shelo Behechshero. I have a right to compare and contrast like elements. With regard to Shechitas Kochim, whether you're Bifnim or Bachutz, Shechitas Oif Kochim is something called Dover Shelo Behechshero, something that's improper. So I can compare two improper things and contrast them with one another. And therefore, on those grounds, I can say Lo Shova Bifnim Bachutz. In other words, the improper Shechitas Kochim Bifnim does not generate Kores. The improper Shechitas Kochim Bachutz does generate Kores. So I can say that with regard to Shechitas Kochim, Bein Mi Bifnim, Bein Mi Bachutz, there is no Tumas Beis HaBliya. However, with regard to Malikas Kochim Bachutz, there is Tumas Beis HaBliya. The Ein Donin Dover Shelo Behechshero, namely Malikas Chutz, I cannot learn it or contrast it Mi Dover Shebehechshero with something that's done properly, namely Malika Bifnim. Therefore, I don't view Malikas Kochim Bachutz as something that's a Dover She'eno Shove Bifnim Kebachutz. It's true that it's Eino Shove, but nevertheless, I can't use the Bachutz as a method of contrasting of creating a contrast between it and Malikas Chutz. Once again, I cannot contrast Malikas Chutz with Malikas Pnim. The Gemara asks, "Velo, is that so that we don't learn something that's improper from something that's proper?" V'ha Tanya, we have the following source, which would seem to indicate otherwise. Minayin liyotze, shem olo lo yered. From where do I know that yotze? Yotze is korban material, whether it be meat from a korban ola or innards from other korbanas. These are elements that are supposed to be offered on the Mizbeach. And prior to their being offered on the Mizbeach, someone improperly took them outside of the Azorah. That's called Yotze. Let's say they were brought back into the Azorah and then placed on the Mizbeach. So the rule is that if they were brought up on the Mizbeach, lo yere, they're not to be brought down. So where do I know that from? And that so far is something that's a Dover Shelo Behechshero. You're dealing with Yotze. That was an improper thing. So where do I know the rule regarding this davar shelo behechshero, sharei yotzei kosher bebama. Yotzei, in the case of private altars during the era that private altars were allowed, private altars, by their very definition, were not bound by boundaries. They were anywhere in Israel. They were anywhere that one wanted to set up a private altar. So they were, by definition, yotzei. That's called behechshero. It was okay to experience yotzei in the case of a boma. So since yotzei was okay in the case of boma, in the case of yotzei, when yotzei represents a problem, when it's not kosher, nevertheless, if it's brought up on the mizbeach, it is not to be brought down. So I just demonstrated that we're learning a dover shelo behechshero from the boma, which is a dover behechshero. The Gemara answers, with regard to the din of yotzei, I don't really learn from the case of boma. The din of yotzei im ola lo yerid is learned from a pasuk. Tana azois teiras ha'ola riba samechle. He, samechle means he relies on the inclusion alluded to by the pasuk of zos teiras ha'ola, which is a pasuk coming to include other cases of things that are brought up onto the mizbeach. Other cases meaning other than the correct or the proper cases, even incorrect situations, if they are brought up on the mizbeach, they remain there. And the Tana here, which was machshir, which said that yoytzim ololo yereit, is not learning from boma. The Mishnah. Molak v'nimtzeis trefa. One did malika to a bird offering and found upon opening up the bird that one of the internal organs was damaged, creating a trefa situation. So naturally, in general, when one slaughters animals and finds that they are trefos, finds, for example, the most common example when discussing trefo, one talks about a hole found in its lung, a puncture. Such an animal, the Torah prohibits from eating. Nevertheless, we know that if one slaughtered, let us say, a cow and found it to be a trefa, that animal is not mitame. There's no tumas nevela. It's different than a case of an animal that simply dropped dead or was killed by some other means other than shechita. Such animals that are simply murdered or they're killed or dropped dead, those animals are called nevelos, and they communicate tumas nevela, a type of ritual impurity. We're going to mention shechita as we go along in the discussion, but the focus right now is on a case of malika. And after malika, it was discovered that the bird was a trefa. Is the tuma removed from it that way as well? We're going to see in the Mishnah the use of a trapezoid, or sometimes we refer to it as a volcano marking. The volcano being that this trapezoid gives the impression of a lateral view of a volcano. Under our Nosei Mivneh heading, you see on the outside margin, the shape is featured. Gimel Deois, three opinions. Be'inyin, number one, Molak v'nimseis trefa, Shochat v'nimseis trefa. We will see three opinions regarding these matters of either Malika or Shechita, and the animal turns out to be a trefa. The first opinion is Rebbe Meir. We also have included a little numbering system on the to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a 1 over here. Rebbe Meir Omer, Eino mitama bebei sablia, that Molak v'nimseis trefa is sufficient in removing the tumas bebei sablia. Rebbe Yehuda Omer, mitame. Rebbe Yehuda says that Molak v'nimseis trefa is mitame, and it's important to point out that Rebbe Yehuda is actually an extreme opposite opinion to Rabbi Meir, because he goes so far as to saying even shochat, the nimseis trefa, is mitame, is not, the shochat, the nimseis trefa, does not remove tumah. We will see the opinion of Rabbi Yossi a little bit later, who represents a middle ground. He will tell us that molak v'nimseis trefa does not remove or prevent the tumas beis habliya from setting in. However, shochat v'nimseis trefa does prevent the tumas nevela from setting in. But in the meantime, the Mishnah features Rabbi Meir arguing his position in favor of tahara. He argues against Rabbi Yehuda, and his position is featured in the Mishnah. We have a little diamond that we're using in the Mishnah, and on the outside margin it's explained under the Mivneh heading, Shnei Shlovim Shel Halimut Rabbi Meir, two stages. It's important to note that there are two stages in Rabbi Meir's developing his point. So let's see them. And we also have a long point marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a nun that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. All of these lines of Gemara are designed to develop this particular point. So, Amar Rabbi Meir, Kal v'chomer. Using Kal v'chomer logic, you will be able to see my position. Im nevelas behema, shemitama b'magu v'masa, shchitosa mitaheres trasa mitumasa. If in the case of an animal, as opposed to a bird for our discussion, in the case of an animal whose nevela has a high level of tuma communication, a dead animal, a dead four-legged animal, communicates tuma through touch or through masa, through supporting it or carrying it. Even if you're not in direct contact with it, if you're merely supporting it, that's called masa. It is so, we'll call it potent, that it communicates tuma through magu masa, which a bird does not do. And yet, even though it has this potential potent form of tuma, the shechita of an animal, which is found to be a trefa, removes the tuma, the shechita of a trefa. Removes the tumas nevela from setting in. So nevela sa'of, when you're dealing with the issue of nevela by oaf, which is less potent, she'eno mitama b'magu masa, a dead bird, a dead kosher variety bird, communicates tumah only upon one's eating of it. But if one touches it or supports it, he is not tome. So the nevela sa'of, which is a lower form of tumah potency, all the more so should the shechita of a bird that's found to be a trefa remove the or prevent the tuma, the tumas beis habliya, from setting in. Stage 2. Now, once we've established that shechitas oif trefa prevents tumas beis habliya from setting in, ma motzinu just like we found by shechita, which in general enables it to be eaten when everything is good, when it's not a trefa, and when it is a trefa, the shechita prevents the tumah from setting in. Af malikoso, so too we can say the same thing by the malika of a sanctified bird. Af malikoso, she machsharto b'achila. In the case of malika being done to a chata sa'of that's healthy, it enables it to be eaten by the kohanim. Titaher trefasoi midei tumaso. So too the malika done to a bird that's found to be a trefa should be effective in removing the or preventing the tumas beis habliya from ever setting in. Rabbi Yossi Omer. By the way, this base of the Shita Mekubetzes points out that which we said earlier, and he delineates it, that there are three opinions with regard to the topic we're dealing with, Shita slash Malika done to a trefa and the ability to prevent the tumah from setting in. But since we gave that already in our introduction, let's go on in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi, who is a third opinion, Omer, Daya Kinevelas Behema. It is enough for us to extrapolate concerning a bird from the case of Behema. Shchitasa v'taharasa v'lo malikasa. If one were to, let us say, break the neck of a Behema from behind in a malika fashion, well, in the case of a behema, that would be a nevela. In the case of a behema, the only thing that prevents tumas nevela from setting in is the proper shchita of it, namely the slaughtering of it with a knife from under its neck. So shchita could be metaher the trefa from becoming a nevela, however, not the malika. So that when you're looking at the malika process done to a bird, you really don't have any precedent for that in the case of a behema. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that only shchita is metayer a trefa from tuma, but not malika. As we go along in the Gemara, we encounter a long question, and this section of Gemara is introduced by our topic heading on the outside margin, the Nosei, Hesber Shitas Rabbi Meir. An explanation of Shitas Rabbi Meir, Leor Ha'uvda, in light of the fact, the Eino Doresh Dayo, he is not following the rules of Dayo. Dayo literally means enough, or it's a word indicating restriction. Let's say a word or two about this. Rabbi Meir was attempting to learn his halacha, namely that Malika's Trefa is capable of preventing Tumas Nevela from setting in, and to learn that from the topic or the precedent presented by a behema. But in the case of behema, the only time that we see Tumas Nevela being preempted, that's only in the case of the slaughtering through Shchita, the knife slaughtering of a behema. So if you want to learn from behema to something else, in this case to the oif, to the bird offering, the derivative topic, namely the case of the bird, cannot contain elements of novelty, of chidush, any greater than its source being behema. So if I'm learning oif from behema, I can only say that I can only derive concerning oif information that I know by behema, namely shchita. The shchita of the oaf can prevent the tumah from setting in, but not the malika, because in the case of behema, there's no malika precedent for preemption of tumah. What we just described is called dayo labo min adin. It is sufficient, or it's enough, for that which is derived through logic. That's labo min hadin. It is sufficient for that which is derived through logic, lios kanidon, to be no more than that which is the precedent or the origin. So information we know concerning a bird cannot be any greater than information we know concerning the behema. In the case of the behema, all we know is that shchita is mitaheres. So too, by the bird, all I can conclude is that shchita would be mitaher. But to go so far, to jump ahead, to say that Malika would also be Matayer, that would be basically a violation of the Dayo principle. So the Gemara is asking now, how can Rabbi Meir conclude that Malika's Trefa is Matayer? Does that not violate the Dayo principle? The Gemara will shortly tell us where this principle is found in the Torah. This is the beginning of a question that lasts a few lines. As you can see, is indicated by our long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf with an encircled kuf with a vertical dashed line that follows, indicating the length of the question. The Gemara asks, Rabbi Meir lo dorish dayo. Does Rabbi Meir not abide by the rules presented by dayo? V'ha dayo doraisa. But this concept of dayo is a Torah concept. We have the following Tanaic source. Midin kal v'chomer ketzad. what would be an example of making a Kal Vachomer? This pasuk features the story of Miriam becoming a mitzoras in the Midbar, in the desert. This is at the in the Parsha, right at the end of Parsha's Baal Voscha, Bamidbar Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Dalid. For those of you who are familiar with the story, where Miriam spoke about her brother Moshe, and she was immediately afflicted with tzoras. The in honor of Miriam, who is a very great individual, the Jewish people remained encamped where they were for a period of a week until her tzoras departed. The pasuk says, we will read the pasuk that we've included on the inside margin, Bamidbar Yud Beis Pasuk Yud Dalet. The pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Ve'oviha yoroik yorak befonel haloti koleim shivas yomim. If her father had become enraged with her, had spit on her, would she not be embarrassed for a week? Tisoger shivas yomim michutz lamachane v'achar teosef. So let her remain quarantined outside the machane for 7 days, and after the 7 days, let her be brought back in. Now, in the case of Miriam, her father was not enraged, but rather it was a sin committed against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which we'll call for, because we find the Chazal referring to this as a problem of Lashon Hara, this is an offense of an Avera against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Pasuk describes the exclusion from the camp of Miriam for a period of 7 days. Now that 7 day amount of time, the Pasuk says, would have been an appropriate punishment, if you will. Her being quarantined or excluded from the camp for 7 days, that would have been appropriate had she enraged her father. What would you say about enraging the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Wouldn't you agree that that's at least twice as serious? Wouldn't you agree that that would warrant being excluded for 14 days? And yet, we know she was excluded only for 7 days. Why is that? Since I'm learning from enraging a father, and we've established, the Pasuk establishes that enraging one's father would result in a 7 day penalty. And I can say Kal Vachomer when it comes to enraging the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Nevertheless, I can't extend the punishment for enraging the Kodesh Baruch Hu any greater than the punishment for enraging one's father, being that the wrath of one's father is the source of information, as is illustrated in this case. So we now read this in this rather brief source. It says, Midin Kal Vachomer Ketzad, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe. We're now, of course, reading the Pasuk in the source itself. And Hashem addressed Moshe, and he says, V'ovio yorok yorak b'foneho. And we saw the continuation of that from that which we wrote in on the side, that if her father had expressed rage against her, she would have been penalized for 7 days. Well, Kal Vachomer l'shchina arbo esor yom. Well, all the more so when the Shechina is enraged, there should be a penalty for 14 days. And yet, she was penalized only 7 days. Elo dayo labo min hadin. Let it suffice for that which is derived through logic or through a Kal Vachomer, lios kanidon, that it should be no greater, not any more severe than the source. Therefore, if the source was wrath of father, which equals 7 days, wrath of Shechina shall be no more than 7 days, as is indicated by as was in fact the case in the Pasuk. And that's what happened in the Midbar. So the question very simply is, how can Rebbe Meir extend the effectiveness of, extend to an oath Malika as being effective in removing Tumas Nevela when the din of oath, when the laws of oath are derived from a behema. And in the case of behema, there is no precedent for Malika. The Gemara answers, and you'll notice we have a long answer marking. That's indicated by the tuf that's to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. All of these lines form the answer for explaining Rebbe Meir. Amar Rav Yossi Rebbe Ovin. Rebbe Meir kro ashkach v'dorash. Rebbe Meir is basing his entire shita, including Malikas, that extends to include even Malikas Trefa as being Metayer. He learns that from a Pasuk. Zois Torah Sabahema V'Oif. V'chi Be'ezah Torah Shofsa Behema L'Oif V'Oif L'Behema. Where do we find a Behema similar to an Oif, a bird, and an Oif similar to a Behema? The Gemara now has a bracketed section that we've put in. Let us skip these brackets for a moment. This will make the reading easier. For in the brackets, there is contained a number of contrasts between behema and oaf. So what is this posuk of Zos Torah Sabema Vof, which seems to equate behema with oaf, what is it telling us? So skipping the brackets, Elo Lomar Loch, Ma Behema, just like by Behema, Dover Shemach Shiru Lachilo Matayar Trefosa Mitumosa, that which enables a Behema to be eaten, namely Shchita, is Matayar, purifies the animal, or prevents a Trefa version of that animal from becoming Tomei. Af Oif, Dover Shemach Shir Bachila, so too by the Oif, whatever enables it to be eaten, Metayer trefasu mitumasu. Now, what enables an oaf to be eaten? Not only shchita, malika too. So oaf is compared to behema through this idea of things that are machshir machila have the power of being metayer the trefa from tuma. And since there is a hekesh between the two, it's not derived through a kavachomer. We have a rule ein meshivan ala hekesh. We don't ask questions and. The hekesh remains, and therefore Rebbe Meir comes to his conclusion from this comparison found in the pasuk. Now we did skip a few lines in the brackets. Let's go over that, starting from the line just above the brackets. That we also have a bracket length indicator. You can see that to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text, a vertical dash dotted line. So that's the length, that represents the length of Gemara that's contained in the brackets. So turning to the line just above the brackets, after citing the pasuk of Zois Torah Sabahema V'Oif, V'chi Be'ezah Torah Shofsa Behema L'Oif V'Oif L'Behema, where do we find them equal? Behema Metama B'Maga V'Masa, Oif Eina Metama B'Maga V'Masa. A Behema communicates Tumah through touching it, or through carrying it, or supporting it. A bird does not communicate tuma that way. Oif mitame begorim abeis ablia, behema eino mitame begorim abeis ablia. An oif communicates tuma while one is swallowing it. A behema, let us say that someone would stick a piece of nevela behema meat, a dead cow, taking a piece of dead cow meat and putting it in the back of someone's throat, and someone would eat it, would swallow it, he would not become tomei. Only in the case of a bird does one become tomei that way. So you see that they are different. So what is the role of the pasuk of Zos Torah Sabahema V'Oif? So we saw already that which we read after the brackets. Let's read it again. Elo lomar loch ma behema dover shemachshir lachila matayr trefasa mitumasa. Af oif dover shemachshir bachila, that which enables it to be eaten, including malika, matayr trefasa mitumasa, has the power of removing the tumas beis ablia from setting in on this bird, even though it's found to be a trefa. V'Rebbe Yehuda my taima, why is it that Rebbe Yehuda holds that it does not, that when something is found to be a trefa, that the slaughtering process is not effective in removing the tumas novela from setting in. Omar Rabba, Kro Ashkach v'Kodorash. Rabbi Yehuda found a posuk, and from that posuk he comes to his conclusion. The Gemara will be citing a couple of psukim along the way. We've attempted to include them on the side of the Gemara. So we'll see a posuk from Vayikra Yud Zayin, posuk Tezvov cited. Let us look at the posuk as quoted on the side of our Gemara. It says, V'chol nefesh asher toichal nevelo utrefa bo'ezrach u'bager v'chibes begodov v'rochatz b'mayim v'tomei ad ha'orev v'toher. So, turning to the Gemara itself, the Rabbo tells us that Rabbi Yehuda is basing himself on this pasuk, which says, "V'chol nefesh asher toichal nevelo utrefa." Omar Rabbi Yehuda, trefa lama nemra. Why does the Torah write the word trefa here, if it's not coming to teach me something special? Before we go on in the Gemara, let's look at Rashi here. Trefa lama nemra. Im lo bo lelamdenu, shemishas trefa cholola tuma, im ocha mimena miyad oi sheshachto vi ocha mimena. If it's not coming to teach me this, so then why does the Torah write trefa? Namely, it must be coming to teach me that from the point that the animal becomes a trefa, there sets in the tumas nevela, if he were to, let us say, eat from it immediately, or he even slaughtered it and ate from it. Either way, there is tumas nevela. Rashi goes on, De'i b'trefa shemesa li'achar shenitrefa komar. If this trefa in the posik is referring to a trefa animal that simply dropped dead, lama nemra, there is no real need to write anything about it, because that would be a case of standard nevela, which is already written in the posuk. So let's read this in the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda says, in this posuk, Vayikra Yitzayin posuk Tezvov, there appears the word trefa, and we should just emphasize that this posuk is dealing with tumas nevela, with tuma, because it says, v'chibes begod v'rochatz b'mayim v'tomei. The person who eats it becomes tomei. It may be pointed out that this posuk also is featuring a bird and its communication of tumas beis ablia. So, continuing in the Gemara, why was the word trefa written into this posuk describing tumas nevela? Im trefa choya. If you are to take the stand, which is a subject of machlokis in the Gemara in Chulin, but if you hold that a trefa is a kind of creature, and it's a situation of an animal that will live and not die, let us say, within 12 months. So if you hold that a trefa is chaya, that lives, and until it drops dead, it's considered becheskes chayim, so hare nevela amura. The word nevela appears in the pasuk, and the trefa, once it dies, it becomes a nevela in its death. So, even if you hold trefa chaya, but when it dies, it becomes a nevela, and the pasuk wrote the word nevela anyway. Im trefa eino chaya, if you hold that a trefa animal is not considered alive, so from the point that it becomes a trefa, it already takes on a nevela status. Harehi bichlal nevela. So why is trefa written in the pasuk? Ela lahavi trefa sheshachata shemetama. It's communicating a new idea that a trefa animal that you slaughtered, namely, it's not a trefa that you waited till it simply dropped dead. It's a trefa that you slaughtered, and nevertheless, it is metama. That is the basis of Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, that not only Malika's trefa is tame, but even Shechitas Treifa is Tomei. Amalei Rav Shizvi L'Rabba. We're about to start a long question. This is indicated by the long question marking you can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, but we also have a triangle. Let us pause a moment and look over our topic heading and structural note that accompanies this Gemara. Under our topic heading, the Nosei, you can see we've written Mokor L'Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, the source for Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, Shechitas Treifa, Eino Metairas Midei Nevela, and we noted that that was based on the writing of the word Treifa in Vayikra Yudzayim Posuk Tezvav. La'orach HaSugya HaGemara Tevarer Ma Bo L'Lameid Nevela U'Treifa Shemofia B'Kama Psukim B'Sefer Vayikra. The Gemara will try to clarify what is the meaning or what is learned from the words Nevelu Treifa that appear in a number of other psukim in Sefer Vayikra. So as far as Vayikra Yudzayin Posuk Tesvav, we see what its meaning may have, at least through the eyes of Rabbi Yehuda, that the Treifa word is telling us this chiddush, that even if you shecht it, it still will have Tumas Nevela. The triangle is part of a marking for the purpose of ma'akav, of keeping track, because in this piece of Gemara, the triangle's position will be flipping around back and forth, with the point facing up, that represents kushios, questions, with the point facing down, tshuvos, responses. So the Gemara asks, and Omar Le Rav Shizvi L'Rabba. Rav Shizvi addresses Rabba. Rabba, by the way, was the one who introduced the answer. The Girsa had added his name at the beginning of the answer that preceded this question. So Rav Shizvi addresses Rabba, Elo Me'ata, Dechtiv V'chelev Nevela V'chelev Treifa. This is a pasuk in Vayikra Zayin, pasuk Chav Dalet. This too we've included on the inside margin. Let's take a look at the pasuk before we go on in the Gemara. The chelev nevela, the chelev treifa, the chelev of either a nevela or treifa, ye'ase l'chol melacha, v'achol lo yisachluhu. Literally, it means that the chelev, which is associated with forbidden fats or forbidden membranes in the animal, this is identified by tradition. People, we know where these sections are inside of animals. So the chelev of either an avela trefa, one is able to use for whatever purposes, but he shall not eat from it. That's as far as the posuk is concerned. So the Gemara is asking, this posuk that says v'chelev nevela v'chelev trefa, hasam nami neima, should we say the following? Im treifa choya, hare nevela amura. Notice the style of Gemara here is going to be borrowing from the style of the answer that Rabba just presented on behalf of Rabbi Yehuda. So should we say the same thing here, that, well, the word treifa here seems to be extraneous, unless it's coming to tell me something new, and that will be a source of amazement to the Gemara momentarily. So should we say the following? And notice we also have a singular quotation marks, which we call a phrase marking, which instructs us essentially to read the next, or that which is contained within the singular quotation marks, in this case it's the next two lines, to read it in one shot. So, should we say the following? Im treifa choya, hare nevela amura. Im treifa eino choya, hare hi bechlal nevela. Ela, since treifa seems to be extraneous, so should we say the following? Ela lahavi, treifa sheshachta, shechelba tahor. Should we conclude, therefore, that, just like you said above, that the word treifa is an indication or signifies a case of a treifa being slaughtered, and should I thereby conclude that the slaughtering of a treifa accomplishes making the chelev tohor? Michlal dehi mitama. Should I thereby conclude that the meat of the treifa that was slaughtered should be metame is metame. The Ha'amar Rav Yuda Amar Rav. The Amri Lo B'Masni Sotana. Either Rav Yuda in the name of Rav or in a Tanaic source, we have the following teaching, which says V'chi Yomus Min HaBehima. That's a pasuk in Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph, and the pasuk says Min HaBehima. When this pasuk is describing an animal that drops dead. And it says min habeimah, which is a limitation. Miksas behemo metama, miksas behemo eino metama. Sometimes a behemo is metama, communicates tuma, and sometimes it does not. When is it that it does not? The azozo. What's the case of an animal that that is no longer alive? That's not metama. Zu trefa sheshachta. This is an example of a trefa that was slaughtered. Ela, trefa miboya le, trefa that was written in the context of chelev, is needed, limute temea, is needed to exclude the chelev of a non-kosher variety animal. For example, horse chelev. That would not be tohor. The pasuk indicated that you can use it for all purposes. That pasuk was in effect telling me that the chelev, even if it came from a nevela, would not communicate tumas nevela. Therefore, the word trefa is coming to serve as an exclusion. It's coming to memayate the chelev of a non-kosher variety animal. One should not confuse, by the way, the common use of the word kosher with the use of kosher in our sugya. In the common use of the term kosher is a reference to things, meat that one is allowed to eat. However, in our sugya there are a number of different categories of that which is, let's say, prohibited, as opposed to the way we use the term, let's say, non-kosher, as an umbrella expression for all kinds of things that are prohibited. When you're learning a sugya of Gemara, you have to be much more specific. There are animals that are labeled non-kosher variety animals. Those are the animals that don't have split hooves and chew their cud. And there are kosher variety animals that can become forbidden as well. If they, for example, drop dead, they're called a nevela. Or if they have some type of organ imperfection, they're called a trefa. Those are all forbidden in eating. However, with regard to their abilities of communicating tuma, there are numerous details and differences. So we're saying now that the word trefa, written in the context of nevela, written in the context of chelev, is needed to exclude the chelev of an unkosher variety animal, namely that its chelev will not be tohor. As follows, mi sheyesh b'mina trefa. When do we talk about the chelev of a dead animal as being tohor, even though the animal itself is tameh, but if you extract the chelev from it, that substance will not communicate tumah? When do we say such a thing, that the chelev of a nevela would not communicate tumah? That's when you're dealing with a variety of animal where trefus is a factor. That's mi sheyesh b'mina trefa. That's when trefus becomes a factor. Yotzes azu, to the exclusion of a horse, for example, a tome variety animal. Tome variety animal is a reference to the Torah's use of the word behemot tomeo, and it's a means of categorizing animals, not to be confused with the communication of tuma, of ritual impurity. A live horse, for example, is called a behemot tomeo, but it does not communicate tuma. So we are saying now that the chelev extracted from a behemoth tameah, from a horse as an example, is not going to be tahor. Why? She'ein b'mina trefa. The issue of trefus is a non-factor when dealing with horses. Whether it's a healthy horse or a trefa type horse, they're all forbidden. So by the same token, just like in the case of chelev, we're using the word trefa to exclude non-kosher variety animals, hachanami. Let us say the same thing with regard to trefa that's written by Tumas Beis Habliyah, which is a reference to the pasuk that we started off with, Vayikra Yudzayin Pasuk Tesvav, which was cited as the source for Reb Yehuda's Shita. Say the same thing. Lemute of Tomei. She'ein b'mino trefa. That the pasuk is coming to exclude an unkosher variety bird from Tumas Beis Habliyah, but is not coming to teach us that a trefa that is shechted will communicate tuma. So if we say this suggestion, we're thereby, slipping the rug out from under Reb Yehuda's feet. He would not have his source. The Gemara answers, Of Tomei, that an Of Tomei is not Mitame Abeis HaBliyah, is not learned from here. There's a separate source for that. Of Tomei the Rabbi Huda, mi Neveila Nafkale. He learns that from the word Neveila. Desanya, the source begins here, and we have what's in effect a long answer, as you can see the encircled tuff to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, which takes us to the end of the page. So, if we free up the word trefa from our posuk in Vayikra, Yud Zayin posuk Tezvav, I thereby will preserve the source for Shitas Reb Yehuda, that trefa sheshachta is metame. What about the unkosher variety bird, let us say a dead eagle, that it is not mitame abeis habliyah? That's learned from a different word, nevela. Desanya, the source begins. Reb Yehuda Omer, yochol tehei nevelas of tomei mitame b'gon abeis habliyah? Could it be that the dead unkosher variety bird would communicate tumas beis habliyah? Talmud lomar, nevela utrefa lo yochal. This is a pasuk from Vayikra Chof Beis, pasuk Ches, which we have featured on the side of our Gemara as well, which says essentially the same thing with a couple extra words. We've written it in. You can see in the inside margin, Nevelo trefo lo yochal letoma vo ani Hashem. So in that pasuk you see Nevelo trefa, mi she'isuroi mishum bal tochal nevela. When is there Tumas Beis HaBliyah? That's when you're dealing with a type of bird that accompanies it, the Isser of Nevela. That if it's not shechted, you would be in violation of Nevela. And if it would be shechted, if it would be slaughtered, there would be no Nevela. Yotza Zeh, this is to the exclusion of an unkosher variety bird. She'eni Suro Mishum Baal Tochal Nevela. Its prohibition is not based on the Isser of Nevela consumption, El Mishum Baal Toichal Tomei. That's a separate parsha, a separate section of the Torah, which prohibits the consumption of unkosher variety birds, where in their case, Shechita would make no difference. So Reb Yehuda has a source for this idea that Nevelas of Tomei does not communicate Tumas Beis HaBliyah from a pasuk in Vayikra, Perichov Beis, pasuk Ches, thereby leaving available the original pasuk cited, Vayikra Yudzayin, pasuk Tezvav, as a source for his halacha that Shechitas Trefa is not Metayer. Unfortunately, we find ourselves in the middle of a discussion which continues a way down Daf Ayin. And Mirtz Hashem, with the help of our markings, will be able to pick up this sense of back and forth when we approach the top of Daf Ayin. But with that, we conclude our shiur for today.